the Vilna Gaon says in the four cups, it means that these, what we call Olam Hazeh, this world, is cup number one. Olam, the days of Mashiach, is cup number two. The days of Tchias HaMesim, resurrection of the dead. And lastly, Olam Haba. So on this sheet over here, it's right here at this page. If you want to know where I am, this is exactly where I'm over here on this page. Okay, so the Vilna Gaon explains that in fact the Arba Kosed are related to this concept that that it's not just about you experiencing freedom in your experiences you're going through now, but in fact it relates to the entirety of life, from beginning to end. It relates to Olam Hazeh, Yimei HaMashiach, resurrection of the dead, Tchias HaMesim, and Olam Haba. The first cup relates to Olam Hazeh. In this world, our job is to be Mekadesh, to sanctify ourselves. And that's the Kiddush that you're making. When you're saying Kadesh, Kiddush is the whole idea of making yourself into an Ish Kadosh, you're making yourself into a person who's holy. The second cup relates to the days of Mashiach, because that's when total clarity be found. We'll be speaking about the redemption of Mitzrayim. And that's the bracha that we share, say, Asher Ga'alanu, that Hashem, you redeemed us from all the hardships. That's what the second bracha is related to. So it's already still within this world, but it's the days of Mashiach. When you go to the third cup, it's referring to the resurrection of the dead, because Berkat HaMazon is recited on a cup of wine. Its main purpose is a person to actually pray for food, for sustenance. So this is also like the resurrection. Why? Because we're actually talking about giving a person life again that they didn't have. That's also, that resurrection is a time for the meal of the tzaddikim, the righteous meal that will happen, Sudas Leviatan. And this obviously is a spiritual thing that Vilna Gaon is actually telling us over here. The fourth cup relates to the world to come. And this is why we say Halal HaGadol, the great Halal on that. And that's when everything good within the world is going to be experienced, whatever is there. So usually when we talk about the four cups, we're talking about a slow process that we have of developing a sense of freedom. Just like the Jews went through hardship and less hardships. Here it's about the bigger sense of freedom. Here the Vilna Gaon is telling us over here that it's actually a much bigger picture. And you have to look at the whole aspect of life. And it's an important part for us to really think about when you're sitting at your Seder, to look at your overall life and to see about your hardships and see how Hashem has relieved you from some of those hardships and giving you different aspects of Geula that you've gone through within your life. Another idea related to that of Kadesh is the idea quoted from Rosh Hashanah Avner. Shlomo Avner mentions this idea in his Haggadah, and he says, in this Haggadah, getting the page open for it, he says that the idea of Kadesh is that the whole aspect of Kadesh is that we know life is about making yourself holy. When we left Mitzrayim, we became an Am Kadosh. We became a holy nation, which means the essence of who we are, the neshama of our nation, is about holiness. And therefore, since that the nation of who we are is the concept of holiness, then he says, Mitoch kach mitzuveh liyot kadosh b'fol. It's therefore our obligation to actively seek ways within our lives to become kadosh. And therefore he says, Aklal hu kadosh, vayachen mitzuveh les kadesh. The general klal, as we start our Seder, if that's about kadesh, it's an obligation upon us to now figure out ways to sanctify ourselves. Da, he says, you should know, Shata Kadosh, you are holy. You have to live your life as you are a holy individual. Okay, that's an important aspect. So when we start our Seder, which is the beginning of everything, we think about Kadesh, not just that we're sanctifying something, which is also a beautiful idea, but in fact, that we are holy. We are holy people that come from this fantastic nation, and that is every time we say Asher Kedishana b'mitzvotav, every time we say Hashem, you sanctify us with all your mitzvos, the concept behind it is for us to be able to recognize what holiness is actually all about. It's a fantastic idea. That's from an idea from Rosh Hashanah Avner. We're going to move on from that. So we have Kadesh. There's a famous idea from Orchatz. I actually didn't bring it in front of me. The famous idea of Orchatz, I think I saw it quoted from the Talmud Rebbe, but the idea of Orchatz is that after a person gets to a level of Kedusha, you have to wash yourself off of all your Avodah Zarah. You have to wash yourself off of all the other things you've been adding to your life and being invested in, all the schmutz that you see, all the experience that first you want to sanctify. So you recognize the ability to sanctify, but as much as you're going to sanctify, you're still filled with schmutz. So you can be Makadesh, but then you have to go and do Orchatz. So you can bring in holiness into your life. You can learn Torah. You can bring tefillah in, you can do wonderful mitzvos. But then as you start being mekadesh, as you start sanctifying, you begin to realize that, you know what? It's not enough. It's not enough. I also have to cleanse myself. And that cleansing of myself is the orchas, is the first time we're actually washing your hands. So it's something for us to imagine. There's a famous idea quote from Nachman of Breslov on this, and he says that right after Orchatz, you're expecting, just like usually, you expect a big meal that's going to come. So you wash your hands, and it's a dime. Maybe I didn't say the bracha. Actually saw in some Rishonim, the Sefer HaChinuch quotes that you would actually make the bracha when it's a dime. But we don't. We don't say the bracha when it's a dime when we start by Orchatz, right? We just wash our hands, because we're just going to have this little bit of karpas, whether it's a parsley, potato, celery, whatever you're going to have. So Nachman of Breslov says that we wash, we're expecting to have this meal, like everybody else does, and then what happens? Suddenly they bring you a little piece of celery, or maybe a little potato, less than a kazayah, something that we're not going to say a bracha. What is this? Why are you giving me something like this? So he says, when we're washing, we're preparing ourselves for something that's going to occur. Ah, I'm getting excited for something. And then, sometimes you see your expectations are just not fulfilled. And then we enter into the state of despair. We have expectations of the things that we have in our life, whether us, our kids, other people within our life, and they don't live up to our expectations. We get sad and we get depressed. So Rav Nachman of Breslov says, you know, you take a piece of whatever you eat, celery, parsley, potato, whatever it is, something simple, and appreciate that simplicity. Be thankful for that little thing that you have. So he says, that's really the first thing you have when it comes to karpas is, I'm expecting something big, but then I don't get it. So I'm all upset that my life is not the way it was supposed to be. Things, the people I expected were not what I wanted. And you know what? I'm going to appreciate even a little bit of a parsley, even a little bit of a potato. That, says Rav Nachman of Breslov, is an element associated with karpas. Another idea associated with karpas, I think if anyone's counting, that we're up to, I think, number four right now, but whatever, or five. Karpas is the Maril. It's a famous idea from the Maril. And actually, in fact, the Mishnah Berurah mentions this idea. I didn't understand it when I first read it the first two, three times. But karpas, actually, do you know what karpas is? Let's ask Israelis. What's karpas?
It can be anything.
It can be anything, but there's a word called karpas. No, there's a word, probably Arabic. Not that. Forget, you're giving me different Torah. What is the food, karpas? The Mishnah Berurah writes that there's actually a food called karpas. It seems to me that that's the food called celery. That's actually celery, yeah? So celery is called karpas, whether it's Hebrew, whether it doesn't look like it's a Hebrew word, probably looks like an Arabic word, but it seems like that's the word karpas. The Mishnah Berurah writes, people, when they take karpas, ideally, they should take karpas. That's what it says. When you take karpas, you should take karpas. So if you have no idea, what did you just tell me? So because if you know Hebrew and the Arabic, whatever it is, you know that karpas actually means celery. So he says, based on the Maril, the reason why you should take celery specifically, because the food itself is, if you rearrange the word karpas, you get samach perech. Samach perech means 60 of backbreaking labor. It's a famous idea from the Maril. The Shavura's point is, when you take a food, it's very similar to Rosh Hashanah. On Rosh Hashanah, when you're going to have simanim at Rosh Hashanah, you're going to have whatever foods you're going to have, dates and pomegranates. We say all these brachot based on that. So it's not the name of karpas that's the part of the Seder that gives the bracha. It's actually the food itself that gives the bracha. So when the Maharil says you're supposed to do samach perech in order to get 600,000 representing the Jews who had backward movement of 600,000. In fact, he means taking the food itself of celery. But this is the famous idea for the Maharil. The Maharil says it's a hint that 600,000 Jews who had backbreaking labor, that's why we eat karpas. So when we dip, we take the hardships and we dip it in as a sign of freedom. Why? Because when we dip things into sauces, that's a sign of freedom. And I've said this before. What does that mean? It means, like nowadays, when you're getting your sushi and you dip it into your spicy mayo or your whatever, your sweet sauce, you're going to schnitzelies and you're dipping it into your all these 10 different types of sauces, that's a sign of freedom. So when we dip, we take backbreaking labor and we actually dip it into something to signify freedom. What's interesting as well, in the Sefer, V'chor Lazav explains, so that's the first half of karpas. So he explains when it comes to charoset, when you're going to be dipping your mar into charoset, okay, when you dip your mar into charoset, the charoset represents slavery, right? Because it's supposed to be like mud, like mortar, and many people have the minhag as well to put cinnamon sticks or shredded cinnamon, not ground cinnamon, but actually pieces of cinnamon, so represents straw. But that word charoset, you can also move it around, and that's samach cheirut, right? So karpas was samach perech, which was backbreaking labor, when by the time you're eating charoset, which is actually later on in the meal, it becomes the same 600,000 people turned into the element of freedom there. That's, you see that at number 3 on your page you have over there. So skipping over the next idea, but again, you're welcome to keep that idea for yourself. But on your page, I'm skipping over the idea just so I can give you some other ideas that we have. Next thing that we have is, I want to mention the idea of yachatz, a couple of ideas associated with yachatz, that the Divrei Yisrael from Mudgett explains the idea that yachatz means, we know yachatz is we break the middle matzah. This is not on your page here, I'm just giving you a side point. You break the middle matzah. When you break the middle matzah, which you're up to, when you break the middle matzah, he says it actually comes from a pasuk in Vayishlach. In Vayishlach, the pasuk says, Vayachatz et hayiladim. Yaakov, when he was on the run from Esav, and he was about to encounter him, he splits, Vayachatz es hamachaneh, he splits the camp. He splits the, es ha'amasherito is actually the words, he divides his family up into different camps. And he says, Vayomer, im yavo Esav yikani, if Esav is going to come and he's going to strike me, Vayamachaneh ha'neshar lifleita, at least the other camp will still be around. So the Divrei Yisrael quotes the Rebbe of Kushmir, and he says that the Yetzer Hara tells you that when you mess up, you oftentimes feel bad and makes us feel terrible. It makes us feel worse than what we've actually done, and makes us feel terrible what we've done. So at least Yaakov Avinu says, you know what? But save half the camp. So he says, if Chas V'Shalom, someone's going to be robbed, let the robber take the smaller matzah and save whatever you have left. So we save the larger piece of Afikoman, save whatever you have available. So look what you can do, not what you've actually lost. So Divrei Yisrael explains the idea of Yachatz is that even we're looking, though, at the Lechem Oni, the hardships that we have, but ultimately there's something good. Remember the good that you have and don't allow your Yetzer Hara to actually take you down. So if you go on number 5 in your page over here, which again, you can calculate how many we're up to. I lost count already. Rav Schwab explains in the Haggadah, famous idea, but it's a beautiful idea, that we hide the bigger matzah. When you break the matzah, you hide the bigger one. Rav Schwab's father had said over, tell the children that the small piece which stays at the Seder is only what we see. And he said, in life, we can be tempted to focus on the things that we do not have or the things that go wrong. But what is going right in life is always much greater. That's the tzafun, that is the part which is hidden, that's the afikomen, that's saved for later. By the end of the seder, when you come to a level of amuna, then we can see it and locate it. Unfortunately, you know, many people, by the time you get to find the afikomen, it's crushed up in little pieces, but you should always see it as a big piece. And a quote here from Rishon Einhorn, I heard it from a couple of places as well, that children generally aren't bitter like some adults can be. They usually see the good much more than many adults who lose their childlike ability to be happy, and that's why it's the children who ultimately are the ones who actually go and search for the afikoman. Can you do me a favor? Can you give these to the other side? Go over there. Go over there. Yeah. So, so that's another beautiful idea associated with yachatz and understanding what we're splitting this matzah. I've mentioned this a few different times, that the idea of the seder itself is always going to be split. You're going to be splitting your Seder into two things. The two things that you're going to be splitting is that there's going to be the element of slavery. You're welcome to open up the Nechitz if you'd like to, but you have to move 3 panels to do it. So there's the element of the first half of the Seder is about slavery, and the second half of the Seder is actually is about freedom. And that's why matzah represents two aspects of life. It's going to be aspects of slavery and freedom, and this is the famous question that we ask on Ma Nishtana. What is Ma Nishtana about? Is it 1 question? Is it 4 questions? So just briefly in the overview on Ma Nishtana, and then we're going to go into a few things associated with Ma Nishtana, is that when we look at the Ma Nishtana, the 4 questions that we have, So it's really only one question. Why is this night different from all other nights? Right? But then we give four distinctions as to why this night is different. We say we usually eat chametz and matzah, tonight is matzah. Then we usually have, we don't usually dip, and tonight we dip twice. And then we have, what's the next? Then we have, help me out, maror. And then we have leaning. Those are the four things that we have. So the classic interpretation, or at least one of the classic interpretations that I remember, is that we're asking the question, the children are asking a pretty specific question. And the question is, I understand that we're talking about slavery. I get it. But if we're talking about slavery, why are we doing things that represent freedom? So if it's a night to celebrate our freedom, then we should be talking about freedom. If it's a night to be mourning and talking about our slavery, we should be doing that. Why should we actually have both? That's the question that's being presented over here. So when we ask this question, because usually you have a time like Tisha B'Av, it's all about sadness. And then you have another time about Simchas Torah, it's all about joy. And now Pesach will come together and you give me both things. Why is this night different than all other nights that we have? Get focused. Either we're talking about matzah, what chametz and matzah, that's good and bad. So what's going on? So the first question is really about matzah. Usually we have good and bad, now it's matzah. It sounds like it's really hardships. Then we have dipping. That sounds like it's a positive thing, because dipping is a sense of royalty. Then we have maror, which is a sense of bitterness. And then we go back to leaning again, which is a sense of freedom. So like, what is it? You keep going back and forth in this whole experience. What is this night that we're actually living through? Is it a sad night? Is it a happy night? So the answer is, you have to be able to have both. In order for you to truly understand what it means to be avadim hayinu, to be free people, or that Hashem took us out, is you have to be a part of that slavery. You have to understand the hardships that the Jewish people went through, and then we actually had the freedom from that. So really, the four questions are asking one question, but the question that's a major question, and that is, just make up your mind already. Which one is it? Good or bad? The answer is actually going to be both. But if you see the way the questions are presented, in either, I actually don't have a Haggadah in front of me. Yes, I do. That's not true. It's presented in, I believe it's presented in a 2-2 form. So if you present it in a 2-2 form, not an alternating form, it goes, the first one is chametz and matzah, the second one is maror, third one is dipping, fourth one is leaning, right? So really it is set up exactly what we need in the Haggadah, because the first two relate to slavery, and the last two actually relate to freedom, because that's the way the whole Seder is going to be set up. The first half of the Seder is going to be all about slavery until you get up to the second cup, right? You finish the second cup and now you get into Hamotzi. Now it all turns into freedom. It all turns into elements of freedom. That's how all the things we're going to be doing is eating. You're going to eat your matzah. I thought matzah is slavery. Now when I eat it, it turns into freedom. So I have to lean with my matzah. I have to do that. Okay, so everything shifts. The first half, when I'm speaking about the Seder, is about the hardships. Second half is actually about freedom. The Vilna Gaon goes one step further to explain that really the second half is not just about freedom. The second half of the Seder is about a prayer for the future. It's about asking Hashem for things for the future. What's the first thing that we have right at the end after we finish our meal and we eat everything? It's the second half of Hallel, which, let's see if I can pull it up over here. Second half of Hallel, which we'll end with, right before you get to Hallel, you have, after Berkat HaMazon, after benching, you have Shvo Chamotcha El HaGoyim, Hashem, pour your wrath out onto all the nations. What is that? That's your first prayer, says the Vilna Gaon. Why? Because the Seder switches from the hardships in the past until after your meal, it now becomes a prayer for the future. And that's what everyone should be thinking about, is the prayer for the future. That's what we want to shift. It's not just simply reliving the past. It's freedom, which is now, and then a prayer for the future. Going back on your page, you're going to notice over here, oh no, I actually don't have it on your page. We're going to go through a few ideas in Manush Dana, even though I mentioned one already for you. I'd like to give you a few other ideas on Manush Dana, which again is not on your page. Let me just see where it is on my page, and then I can tell you on yours. If I have it here, then I'll tell you. If I don't have it here, I won't tell you. Let me just see where it is. I don't think I gave it to you, but I have it here. Okay, so Manishtana. A few different ideas of Manishtana. Questions asked, why is it when it comes to Manishtana that, in fact, we don't say Lama Nishtaneh? Why is this night, why is it different than other nights? How would you translate Lama Nishtaneh? How do you translate that?
In the future tense, Lama Nishtaneh, why will it change? How do you say Manishtana?
Or Lama Nishtana?
Why should we change?
Why is it different? Why isn't it? Right? If you look at all the English, Haggadah is going to tell you, why is this night different than all other nights?
Right.
What did we say? Ma. What is different than all other nights?
Right.
So then it's not really a question, because then the kid says, what's different than all other nights? On other nights, we do this, tonight we do this. Why are you asking me questions? What? You just told me what. Right? I thought you're asking me a question here. It's a rhetorical question. What is different on this night than all other nights? So it should say, Lama, why is this night? Because every Haggadah you open in English is going to tell you, why is this night? But that's not the Hebrew. The Hebrew doesn't say why. The Hebrew says, Ma, what? What is this night different than all the other nights? Okay, it's a question that is asked. So the question is, what are we actually saying over it? So Maharal explains, Ma means Ma inyan zel lanu. What does this have to do with us? What is the point of this? So I know that all these things are for the sake of Mitzrayim. I get it. Fine. What relevance does it have to me? So why are we making, what is the purpose? Why are we making all these changes for this night? What does that obligate me to do? So the what in the question is, what's my job? Says the Maharal, Ma over here is what? What is my job once you give me all these distinctions? You must be giving me something else. So it's not why, it's actually what. What's my obligation from this? The Haggadah of Leil Shimurim explains another idea, and that is, we're not trying to find out why this night is different. Ela ma, yikriya b'lashon hispalos. You should look at things in a sense of wonderment. Okay? You should be, wow, look at all these differences, which is why many Haggadahs will tell you, do other things to get the kids interested. Get the people interested. Okay? One of the views... And halacha, as we mentioned the other day, is it's not clear whether when it says you give out candies, or it goes in which we said the other day, you give out candies to children, is it during the Seder or before the Seder?
Mm-hmm.
Some of the views of the Rishonim are you actually give it out before. You give it out before. Why? To keep them awake so they'd be excited. What's going on here? I'm excited for this whole experience. I want to know what's actually happening. So usually we're trying to do like carrot and stick. We're trying to like get them prodding to give them stuff during. But really, it's to get them to wonder, what's going on over here? What's the point of this? We want them to get excited about questioning what's actually happening. Those are two ideas on the lama versus ma, why versus what over here. If you believe Diskin also mentions an idea, is that, do you notice that the one thing we have by Manashtana is we sing it. I don't know any house that does not sing Manashtana. And the Seder is full of many, many different things which requires song associated. Or Shuvalei Diskin explains is that the Mishnah tells us in Pesachim and the Gemara, Amrav Yochanan Kol Akori Below Ni'ima Veshonu Below Zimra. Anyone who reads without a pleasantry and he reviews without song, the pasuk in Yechezkel says, "Vegam Ani Natati Lahem Chukim Lo Tovim." I also gave you edicts, laws that are not enjoyable. I mean, the purpose of singing is to recognize that everything has an enjoyment to it. It's very important. So many people love the Seder because of the songs. But the more you sing through things, the more you're going to actually have an enjoyment of it. So when you have a question of wonder, why these things are actually happening, it's actually there that you can have a sense of enjoyment to the whole process. And by singing something, it actually gives you enjoyment to the process. Now, again, if you're tone deaf or you don't like singing, that's a separate issue. But at the end of the day, the singing gives you that enjoyable process. And therefore, when a person actually learns Torah, they're supposed to sing. They're supposed to actually sing as they actually learn Torah. Next, let's go on in this next idea. We're going to go on your page. You have it, if you have it, number 8 over here. This idea, the Arba Banim, the 4 sons. In the class that I gave last night, that was a class on how to make your Seder exciting and more relevant to less observant people. So he said that it's not your job to then begin to suddenly teach Emunah for the first time to people who are anti-Emunah. So Chaim Kanievsky mentions the idea that we say to the Rosh, or we say to the wicked son, we say to them, "Ilu hayasham lo hayanigal." If you would have been there, you would not have been redeemed. So he explains the idea that maybe you know, if he would have been there, he would have been redeemed. How do I know? So Reb Chaim Kanievsky said that had he seen all the miracles in Egypt, that Russia that you're talking to at your Seder, we're not saying anybody has a Russia at their Seder, but that Russia that we're talking to is at the meal, he says that had he, because we say, Ilu Hashem, had you been there, you would not have been redeemed. You would have been one of the people who would have died. Why? Had I seen the miracles, I would have changed my life. I would have changed my life had I seen miracles. So says Reb Chaim Kanievsky, says not true. The Haggadah is actually telling us the opposite. When a person doesn't want to believe, they'll do whatever they can. You can show them all the miracles in the world. When a person doesn't believe, right? If he doesn't want to believe, he won't believe. Okay? He says, Badafka. He had, he would have been in Mitzrayim, it would have been the same disbeliever that he is right now. Okay? And therefore, a person has to realize that when you give the answer to the Russia, you're not actually giving the answer to the Russia. You give it over to one of the other kids, and the Russia is listening along the side. So if you have someone who is not, who's going to go antagonistic at you at certain things, you can give them a hug and give them some love and all these other things, but if you're not getting into philosophical conversation with them because they just want to disbelieve. Okay, so that's what it says of Chaim Kanievsky there. Number 8 on your page over here, the Arba Ban, the Haggadah of Atar Libeinu. Again, we're not up to number 8, we're probably up to number like 15. Why did Avraham and Yitzchak both have to have children who are wicked? Why did they have to experience such pain and agony? The reason is to be limud zechut, to see a merit for the Jewish people. Hashem should have mercy on us in light of these wicked people. Even though Avraham and Yitzchak had children went off the derech, even they had them. Right. Okay? The reason that there, Shlomo Kluge says similar, that the reason Hashem waited for us to get to the 49th level of Tumah, so nobody should make the mistake of thinking that the reason we got out because we did some particular merit, we did something great that we had, it wasn't due to any specific choice, but rather because of who we were as people, not actually what we did, and therefore we shouldn't be judging anybody else. For anyone that has children that are not, or anybody, family members that are not following along the path of Hashem, they also have to be understood in the things that they're actually going through. The Tolna Rebbe explains, you have a number 9. The opposite of the wise son is should be unwise or foolish. Why is he called a Rasha? So Tolna Rebbe says is that we see from here that wickedness is actually called foolishness. Okay, the opposite of wicked, the opposite of a chacham, a wise person, is someone who's actually foolish. My Zoom is going to run out of time, so I'm going to start the Zoom again. You can welcome to join me again. Let me just do that one again. How do I get to that meeting? Hold on. I'll be with you quickly.
He tries to entice other people not to
necessarily.
Could be other people also to join him.
That's a different thing. That's a mesit, you know. That's a different.
I really see him as an influencer, a bad one. He goes the wrong way. Once he goes, he joins him.
Okay, so fine. Let's go on over here. So again, the Talmud Rebbe explains over here, it's when a person is wicked, it means he's acting unintelligently. If you want to be happy and productive and reach your goals, like being a rush is absolutely a terrible choice. You're not productive. You're not using your mind. You're a fool to actually do this way. So that's why the rush is the opposite of the chacham. That's what Talmud Rebbe says. Mentioned a beautiful idea from the Rav Dessler, and Michta Meliel explains the idea that when it says that initially we were idol worshippers, so the question is, why do we have to mention about Abraham's parents and grandparents? It's no relevance to us. Mm-hmm. Abraham is the start of Judaism. So why do you say we were idol worshippers? How do you know you're idol worshippers? Because Abraham came from Terach and Nachar and all these people that were idol worshippers. What relevance has to us? It's nothing to do with. You're not mentioning anything about me. Maschil Begnus, you're talking about the negativity of what? I didn't do anything bad. His parents are wicked. He's the one who found Judaism.
It's relevant to you. Off the road
sometimes. Nah, I wasn't off the road. Again, Judaism starts with Avraham Avinu. He's the one who found Hashem. Nobody else knew Hashem. So when we say we're going to mention about all the negative things that happened in Judaism, this didn't happen in Judaism. That happened before. So how are you starting with negativity? So says Rav Dessa, brilliant idea, amazing idea. He says, no, really what we want to be able to learn from Matcha Bignus of talking about negativity is not about Avraham. It's to see how someone like Avraham was able to withstand the tide and everybody else around him worshiping idols and doing all these things. And he said, I am searching for truth. I'm standing up for truth. I am living truth. That's all we mentioned over here by Avram and his ancestors. Why? Because they all went against. They all just went with the tide and did whatever they wanted, but they did not actually have the ability to go in search of the ultimate truth. This is what stands out for Judaism. For the Jewish people, when the whole rest of the world outside is doing crazy stuff and we're still doing the will of Hashem, that's an idea of Mascha B'Gnus, that why Avram actually stands out in this particular idea. same idea. But no, that's a different idea. Okay? I have over here, if you look at number 11 over here, I love this idea. The Be'er Chaim in Rav Meir Chabir explains this idea. Even though everyone needs to do Cheshvan Nefesh, we need to think about the things that we've done wrong within our lives and in our days, and we have to have introspection, it's not something we should harp on. And he says, if you do it, it leads to laxity and depression. So the Slonim Rebbe explained, Mitchila, if someone harps on their sins from the beginning, we were idols from the beginning, then it's a form of Mitchila of the Avodah Zarah. If you're stuck on what you did wrong in life, then you're an idol worshiper. That's what you are. But Achshav, but if now you focus on what now is in your life, if someone works on himself at this moment, on his present, on his future, then he will be Kervanu Hamakam Avodaso, that Hashem brought you close with him. So you have to be able to look at life as even I've done things wrong, I have to be able to cut my losses, move on, bring myself actually closer to Hashem. We're going to an idea from Vayareu Lanu Hamitzrim. So I actually have two pieces over here. We're just going to quote to you one. And you, if you, those of you that have the printout, you can look at the next page after it. And that is... No, it's not in this one. It's actually not in that one. Sorry, I have it in another place. I'm not going to quote that yet. The Egyptians caused hardship to us. It caused ra to us. Usually, if you look on page number 12, is where I have it over here, Salvechik points out, it means that they mistreated us. But in fact, then it should have said, Vayare aleinu. But what is Vayareu osanu? They did it to us. So here he says what they did to us is that they made us evil. They thought of us as evil, and they assigned bad attributes to us and made us look like we're terrible people and gave us negative qualities. Look at what's happening in the world today with Israel, right? Israel defend themselves. What happens? They're evil. They're terrible people. Who would allow you to do that, right? So that's what the Egyptians actually did to us. They didn't just attack us. They actually presented in their society to the fact that we are evil and we shouldn't be alive. You saw this with the Nazis. You saw this every time. How could human beings do this? Easy. Happens over and over again in societies. They made us into these bad people. Pyro accused us of disloyalty, of plotting a revolution. If you look at the beginning of Shmos, maybe pen year bed, they're going to increase and they're going to take over and they're going to run out. What? Where are you getting this from? Pyro's creating a whole scheme to show how they're really terrible people, how the Jewish people are terrible people. So they ruined the reputation of the Jewish people. Another idea, quoting from the Zera Kodesh, Zera Kodesh explains the idea that, in fact, do you want to know what happened over here? What happened over here, let's see if I have it in Hebrew. He says, Vayareo Sana Mitzrim, is that they made it bad for us. Vayareo Sana Mitzrim, he says, their intention was, Lahachti Osanu, to cause us to sin. Why? If we can learn from their ways, then we'll follow in their path. So what they did was, Vayareo Otanu over here means, they made us into Re'im. They made us into friends. So he says, Vayareo Otanu Mitzrim, Lashon Hitchabrut V'Re'ut. He made us into friends. They began, you know, hanging out with us, doing all things with us, so we can become part of their life. Everything can be like whatever they did. Vayareo Otanu Mitzrim wasn't that they just made us look bad. In fact, they were great friends with us. They made us into their friends. Vayideze, Vayanunu. Then they afflicted us. Vayitnulinu Vada Kasha. They gave us hardships. Why? Because we lost our power because we didn't separate from them. Because we became great friends with them and didn't separate from them, that's how we actually had bad hardships actually happen to us. Always, whenever I give a Haggadah this year, I always have to say over my father's famous joke that he says, and that is that that first they gave us hardships. Omdim aleinu l'chalotenu, v'Hakadosh Baruch Hu matzilenu miyadam. I say the joke every year, and that is just the pun. Omdim aleinu l'chalotenu. They wanted to give us hardships l'chalotenu, so they gave us chala. But Hakadosh Baruch Hu matzilenu. Hakadosh Baruch Hu gave us matzah, and He actually saved us from it. Right. So, okay, we're just going to go on to. I want to give you a couple more points over here. One is some beautiful ideas on frogs. Okay. Don't ask me why, but I got four different ideas on frogs alone. Okay? Now, what happened in the story of frogs is that Hashem says, I'm going to give you frogs, and they're going to come out everywhere, and they're going to go into your homes, and into your beds, and into your ovens, and into your cabinets, and into your mixing bowls, is what the Torah actually mentions over there. So what happened after Paro says, get rid of these frogs for me? What happened? Someone tell me. What happened? Moshe called out, and... Called out and?
The storm came and took all the frogs.
Somehow they died, yeah? Frogs died.
Yeah, they thought they were going to use it for something.
Whatever, the frogs died, yeah? Frogs died, they're not going to eat anymore, no frogs legs. What else happens to the frogs? Huh?
Smell
of the frogs? Smell seems to be from the fish.
Flies.
Beivasha isn't that from the fish? But what I'm going to just quote you, this idea over here is the Das Kanim actually says an amazing idea about the frogs. Really takes us into a few different ideas associated with frogs, but I'll just mention one or two of these things with frogs. So this should be in Parshas Va'era. So he says, still not there yet. I want you to get rid of all these frogs from everywhere. Let them just remain in the Yaor. Let them just remain in the river. So Moshe calls out, Vayas Hashem Kedvar Moshe, and Vayamusa Tzvardim, the frogs died from Min HaBatim, from the homes, from the Chatzirot, from the courtyards, and from the fields. Vayizbrosim Chamim Chamim Tavash Haaretz, as you're right, Yaakov said over here, the land became smelly. Okay? There's two things happened. This happened by blood, and this also happened over here. The word vayivash, the smell already permeated the air from both these places. So now it became a very, very stinky place. Fine. So, but what happens over here? Chamarim, chamarim, right? It became piles. Vayitzrosim chamarim, chamarim, vatevash haaretz. It became piles of frogs everywhere. So the Das Kanim says, if you look through the story of frogs, what you'll notice over here, these are the words of the Das Kanim. The Das Kanim's words are, Aval osam sheba tanurim. When Moshe got all the frogs to die, those frogs that were in the ovens, lo mesu, they did not die. Lefi shebatchu b'kadosh baruch hu, because they trusted in Hashem, v'nichnesu b'tanur cham, and they jumped into hot ovens, b'tzivo Hashem, by the fact that Hashem commanded them. So the Das Kanim says that in fact, even though all these frogs, even though Paro requested that the frogs that come from they just end up back in the river, there were still some frogs that remained. And those are the frogs that were in the ovens. They remained. Of course, why? Because they trusted Hashem. And in fact, this is the Gemara. If you look on your page over there, Tashma, the Gemara says that Todos Yishromi explained that Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, they gave up their lives to be thrown into the fiery furnace. How did they jump? Why is that? Because they learned the Kal V'Chomer. What was the Kal V'Chomer? They learned, they said, if frogs jumped in the ovens that were hot, and that's why the word bimisharo sum is their mixing bowls, as the Gemara says, right next to when the oven was hot. So if frogs jumped into the furnace, and they are not commanded for God to jump into the furnace, they have no mitzvah of kiddush Hashem, but yet they did it nonetheless. So then they said, well, you know, we should do the same thing. We are commanded to sanctify God's name. So certainly we have to go ahead and jump into the furnace. That's what the Gemara says. They are not commanded to sanctify God's name. We are. If they did it, certainly we have to do it. So the question was asked by the Shagasari to the Vilna Gaon, and that is, what do you mean they're not commanded? The Pasuk says they're going to jump into your homes, they're going to jump in everywhere, and they're going to jump into your ovens. So of course they were commanded. So the Vilna Gaon, when he was a young boy, answered this question. And he said, in fact, they were not commanded because it was a general command. We need some frogs to get in bedrooms. We need some frogs in kitchens. We need some frogs in ovens. And there were a select number of frogs that decided we're going into the oven. So they did it willingly to go into these ovens. And therefore, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, they decided, you know what? If they did it, then we certainly actually have to do it as well. And therefore, they jumped in the oven as well. Rav Tzadok HaKohen says, unbelievable idea. We're just going to mention one brief line of that idea that he says, that when the frogs actually jumped in, there's a Gemara that actually tells us that if we would not have received the Torah, we would have learned different appropriate midos from different animals. Such as, we would have learned the mida of tzniut from a cat, a chatul. We would have learned the mida of something else.
Ant.
Arias from, well, we would have learned, what was it, ant?
Ant is not gzela.
Ant is not stealing, right? Says it so like a coin. You would have learned the concept of Kiddush Hashem through a frog. From this Gemara. Well, you would have learned the idea of Kiddush Hashem from a frog. That you have to give up your life for the sake of Hashem. You would have learned it from a frog. Okay? So the whole concept of Kiddush Hashem, and we don't, and not the Torah told us, you actually learned it from a frog. Fascinating idea. Okay? And I'm just going to share with you, I want to give you some ideas from Chaim Kanievsky. At the end, we're going to end with this. two different ideas. So, actually, I apologize. I'm going to give you the first one, which is Rav Soloveitchik, which I have here. It's in your printouts over here. It should be in your last page on that. Where he says, right? You should have it there. There's a little star next to it. Where it says, I'm going to make you into a goy gadol. So he says, the Jews were distinguished from the phrase goy. Gadol is different than the word goy. Goy, it's funny because we're goy gadol, and they're called goyim. Right? When you refer to a goy, we're also called a goy. The difference is we're a goy gadol. Okay? We're a big nation. You're just a goyim. We are a big nation. What's the difference? So he says, what's the difference over here? He says, when you add goy and gadol, it means something different. Mitsuyanim. We're distinct. We're unique. A goy gadol, a great nation, is distinguished in two areas. First, in the area of righteousness, because we have a pasuk that tells us in Devarim, "Umi goy gadol asher yesha chukim mishpatim," right, which means that we're more righteous. If a nation is emotionally capable of approving injustice, it cannot lay claim to greatness, no matter how powerful it is militarily or economically, or how ingenious it is. What does that mean? Again, if a nation allows injustice, then that is not a goy gadol. Because you have to have righteousness associated with you. Real greatness is the innate quality of fairness and righteousness in the spontaneous indignation when everyone is confronted with hypocrisy and selfishness. Without having to explain that, you understand the idea. If a nation cannot show righteousness, meaning tzidkus over here, and go against injustice, then in fact it cannot be a goy gadol. The second thing is a goy gadol distinguishes in the area of tefillah. A great nation is a nation that prays and knows the secret of prayer. This is also true of an individual. A great person knows the secret of tefillah. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were great because they were acquainted with prayer. And therefore, that's why Kadosh Baruch Hu says over to them, I'm going to make you into a goy gadol. That's what he says over to Avram. Therefore, we say in the Amidah, okay, Avraham, why? A great nation consists of someone, of many praying individuals who feel each other's pain, and who suffer and pray in community. That's the idea of a goy gadol. So one is understanding what's wrong, being righteous, and the other one is actually the element of tefillah. With that, we're going to go over to a couple of pieces over from Rav Chaim Kanievsky on the element of tefillah. So Rav Chaim Kanievsky says that you have to understand that throughout the Seder, you have many aspects of it, that Bnei Yisrael, Bein Chu Bnei Yisrael, they were groaning, Vayizaku, they cried out to Hashem. So a few different ideas that Rav Chaim has, that tefillah, you have to understand your prayer actually works. It makes a difference. So here, he quotes here the story of Rabbi Ran Ilan, who was a kolol Rosh Avreichem in Beit Shemesh. 2 a.m, the phone rings, and one of his Avreichem, one of his students, whatever, one of the kolol members called, and he says that his son has terrible fever, and they saw that he has a tumor. They ran him to the hospital. They said he had a tumor, and they saw that that it looked very bad. So the Rosh Kol says, "Why are you calling me at 2 o'clock in the morning?" So he said to him, "Well, I need you to go to Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Go to Rav Chaim Kanievsky and ask him what to do." So he said, "Fine, come with me." So they took the father to Rav Chaim Kanievsky to get there an hour before Vasikin. Who knows what hour that was in the morning? And they ran to Bnei Brak, and Rav Chaim said to him, "Bring me the boy." He took this boy. He's in the hospital. "Bring me the boy. I need to see this boy." No. They brought him. Rav Chaim Kanievsky said to him, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" So the boy said, "I want to be like you." He says, "Ritzoni liot kmo harav. I want to be like Rav Chaim Kanievsky." So when he said that, when he heard this, Rav Chaim Kanievsky said, "Bring me that special wine that I have." They brought the wine, said, "Let's make a l'chaim together." Okay, mazag l'kulam v'shasu l'chaim. Pour it for everybody drink. And he said, "Go back to the hospital and ask them for another test. And if they tell you it's going to cost you money, pay whatever you can to make sure they do that other test." They ran back to the hospital. The doctor said, "There's nothing to talk about. Tumor is huge. We have to do surgery right now. We saw last night. We saw everything. Nothing's changing from last night till today. You want another test? You're going to pay out of pocket. I'll pay out of pocket. It's fine. I'm telling you, it changed. We went to the Rav. We went to Rav Chaim Kanievsky. He said, do another test. I'm telling you, it changed." So they went to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and he said, So he said, "We went to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and they said, what happened? It's gone. The whole thing went away." So he said, "What happened? Where to go?" Let me just see. I lost my page. So where to go? He said, "I don't have it in front of me here." He said, "The whole tumor would disappear." So what, it must be the school of the wine. It must be a special wine that you had. So he says, "No, it wasn't the school of the wine. It wasn't that." He came back to Rav Chaim and said, "What happened?" He said, "Once the boy tells me that he wants to be a Talmud Chacham, I sat there and prayed for him. And I prayed my heart out for him so he should be able to survive. Because if someone wants to continue learning Torah, we should pray for that person." He said, "That's what it is. It's in the segula of prayer that actually worked in that scenario." So Rav Chaim actually prayed for this boy, and he survived in this scenario. It goes on to say the following, that many times questions are asked to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and his response is always, you have to go into prayer. Tefillah is what you have to do. You have to be mechazik yourself. You have to always strengthen in tefillah. And sometimes even when a woman came to me and said, "I've been praying for this, and the opposite happened. This, the opposite. I was praying for shalom bayis, my husband left me. I was praying for parnasa, my business failed." He says, "You know what you have to do is you need to pray for your prayers to work. Okay, don't just pray for things to happen. Pray for your prayers. That's what you have to do." he said that prayer that comes from your heart is a prayer that's always going to be answered. And what that means is, even if a person says, "But I pray three times a day," that's not what I mean by prayer. Prayer means something that's unique, something that's special. Even if you're davening every single day, it has to be something that's going to feel like it's totally different. And that's ultimately has to be coming from your lab, that your heart should be broken, that you actually want to pray in that way. Even so, someone came to him and said that his neighbor was expanding his house and overcame, or he was expanding his house and overcame on his neighbor's property. Now blocked his view, and he's taking him to court. So what am I supposed to do? Should I go to court with him? So I try to do it outside of court. So Chaim Kanievsky says, "You should daven." He says, "Listen. There's laws that are associated in the Torah. Either I'm at fault or I'm not at fault. What should I do?" He said, "Daven. Even if it's going to invalidate a Torah law, but your tefillah can actually," the man said to him, "Nivata kol din Torah. If you're going to say I'm going to pray for everything, then I need to know what a law is. Should I do? Should I not do?" He says, "No. You might not have this law associated. If you pray, Hashem can change anything that actually exists once you get into the world of prayer." And therefore he says, when a person is going through a difficulty, you have to go through real tefillah. He says, what does tefillah help of an average individual? So the Medrash actually says that when all people were praying for rain to come, there was one woman who built a new oven from clay, and she didn't want rain to come because then the oven wouldn't be able to dry out and it would ruin her oven. And so she prayed that it shouldn't rain. And in fact, the rain did not come. The rain did not come because of one woman. So, and not only that, we know the Kohen Gadol has to pray that the people who are murderers should not pray for him to die. Right? The Kohen Gadol's mother would make him make cookies to give all the people. Why? Because even though there might have been wicked people, they killed people, they did something wrong, nonetheless, the prayer of an individual can actually be answered. So he said that, why is it that people's tefillahs might be answered? Why is it that woman's tefillah is going to be answered for the rain? Everyone else needs rain. She doesn't want rain. Why is hers going to be answered? He said that they were praying for something to change. She was praying for something to actually stay the same. Sometimes in life, you should be praying for things to actually stay the same. Hashem, please enable my parnasa to continue to be good. Please allow my kids to continue to be healthy. Please allow these things. When you pray for something to stay the same, that's actually also something positive to actually pray for. Lastly, in this element of prayer, that when it comes to tefillos, and I've heard this from a number of different rabbanim as well, that when it comes to your children, the way you have success in your children is to pray for them. You can do all the other things, but ultimately you can buy all your parenting books. It's really prayer for them. And then Tana Devei quotes, there's an incident that happened with a Kohen, that he was a big Yerei Shemayim, but he was a hidden tzaddik. He had 6 sons, 4 daughters. Every day he would daven for them, and he would cry his heart for them, and he'd say, please do not let them succumb to any of the outside influence that exists in the world. And don't let them do anything bad. Amr lo yetzal, so shana ad sheba Ezra v'hel es Yisrael. At that year, Ezra brought everybody back to they brought everybody back to Yerushalayim by the second Commonwealth. And by the time this Kohen passed away, eventually in his life, every one of his kids were great Kohanim, and they did amazing things for another 50 years. Why? Because he sat and he actually prayed for his children. And therefore, a person has to realize that prayer makes a huge difference. And therefore, a Kolo member came over to Rav Chaim and he said to him, he was concerned about one of his children and his ruchnis, his spirituality, and he said, you should know, when it comes to, the only thing you can do for your children is actually pray for them. But he said, quoted from a medrash, that, but I thought tefillah is only part of it. Tefillah is only part of it. He says, you know what? In our generation, mechza zeharbe. Even half is considered a lot. You should actually pray for your children in that scenario. Lastly, and we're closing with this idea, lastly is the idea of recognizing at your Seder, Mida Keneged Mida, measure for measure, that Hashem does measure for measure for people. And why do we know this? Because we say in Dayenu, we say Veshika Tzareinu Betocho, not only did you save us, but whatever you did to the Egyptians, you did in such a way that it was measure for measure. They had extra things done to them. Whatever they did to us, that actually happened to them. For the efforts they actually did to us. So just leaving you with this final story, and that's the story from Rav Chaim Kanievsky, quoted in Kol Mashal Osecha. There was a woman that came to Rav Chaim Kanievsky's wife, and she was a photographer, and she lost her film, she lost all these things, and she's going to lose a lot of money because she lost all of this film. She doesn't know what she's going to be able to do. So the Rebbetzin went over to Rav Chaim Kanievsky and said, you know, she lost all this film, you know, a huge job that she lost. She took all these pictures. She has to develop all this film. What's she going to do? And she is the daughter of so-and-so rabbi. She wants a bracha that she should be able to find it because her parnas is really dependent on this. The door was open and the woman is standing there by the door as the Rebbetzin is giving this information over to Rav Chaim Kanievsky. So Rav Chaim Kanievsky heard her say what the Rebbetzin said. So I said, which daughter is this of this rabbi? He says, oh, it's the oldest one. So he says, which one is the first, second, or third? He knew the family. So he said, which one it is? Which one it is? So Rav Chaim says, tell her it's coming to her. She deserves it. Right. She deserves it, you know. So I'm not going to give her a bracha. She deserves it.
Are you serious?
Right? So the Rebbetzin turns to the woman and says, what happened? What's going on? So the woman's silent. Rav Chaim Kanievsky says, because of her, Her father lost 20 books, Svarim, and Kisvei Yado, handwritten notes that he had written of different things of words of Torah. Therefore, it comes to her Mida Kenegan Mida, measure for measure. So the woman goes, what are you talking about? No way, this never happened. But after, in the afternoon later on, she comes back to the Rebbetzin, and she says, now I remember many, many years ago, I caused my father to lose all of his farm, whatever the 20-something farm that he had. And she went to her father and she called him. She asked for forgiveness on this, and that she feels terrible for the fact that she caused him to lose all of these farm that he had. So now she went over. She went back to the Rebbe and said, "Look, I recognize it was me. I even apologized to my father." So now she went to the Rebbe and says, "Okay, can you give her a bracha now?" To Rav Chaim Kanievsky. And so he says, "Okay, give her a bracha." The next day, she found all of the film that she had lost because it was the Mida Kenegan Mida that actually happened. So one of the things that we have here in the Seder is when we recognize what the Egyptians did to us. In fact, it's measure for measure. What's actually going back to them. And that's one of the ways that Hashem runs the world. So we have to see this for ourselves. If there's ever something that's happening to us, we have to recognize perhaps there is a measure for measure that we have to try to fix in order that Hashem can actually give us bracha and these things. These are some of the insights you have that you can share at your Seder. Laila.